Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Four Corners Crimecast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm Katie.
Today we're going to be doing things a little bit differently. Katie's in the middle of some intense research for the episode we got coming up for you guys next week. So Rory and I are going to be taking a look at a local case. It's the murder of Jordan Peterson, who was a 21-year-old kid who was senselessly murdered and dumped in the desert over a relatively small drug debt. So that's what we're going to be doing. Katie will be providing some of the shucks and jives in this one.
I'm getting learned it today.
And so we're going to go ahead and take a look into this and see what we can find out.
Yeah, so I just want to give a little shout out to Katie because I did like 2 hours. Jake and I sat there for like 2 hours in silence doing research and my brain is already numb. Katie literally sits there for 4 or 5 days reading books and doing more research. So we're just going to do a quick little bit of content for you, just a little local thing that we know about that everyone in Tucson basically either remembers or knows about, because you guys definitely remember it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I actually don't.
You don't remember it at all?
I don't remember hearing about any
of
this.
Oh, man, no. That's crazy. Yeah, this was a pretty big thing, I guess.
Katie was in high school without a care in the world.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and kick this one off. It's something that Jake and I just researched, and we remember going through it and all of it, and we knew people that knew the kid. And
this was like the only case that popped into my head when we were talking about doing this.
Yeah, this is like one of the local Tucson ones that Jake and I actually remember and are actually know people that knew the kid and knew people that went to school with him and all sorts of stuff like that. So we decided that we were going to, you know, take a quick crack at it. And it's just going to be Jake and I doing all the research on this one. Katie's coming in fresh ears, doesn't know much about the case.
Along for the ride.
Along for the ride. And hopefully she can give us some questions or comments. And we can, if we're being unclear, she'll point it out and, you know, tell us what we're doing wrong.
Hell yeah.
All right. So this one is the killing of Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson was born on March 22nd in 1990 in Boston, Massachusetts. He lived in California and Iowa before settling in Vail, Arizona with his father. Jordan was your average Tucson 21-year-old. He loved to ride ATVs, hang out with his friends, and he loved looking at art, drawing, and all sorts of things like that. He did study psychology, but like every 21-year-old, he still struggled to figure out what he wanted to be when he grew up. Unfortunately, Jordan would never get the chance to figure that out. So on November 16th, 2011, Jordan Peterson received a text message from one of his friends regarding a debt owed for marijuana. The message was from one of his friends, Breed Marone, who owed Peterson a substantial amount of money, about $4,000.
Fuck that guy.
So he texted something along the lines of, I have your money, bring some more weed. And he referred to, you know, bring some more weed over to his house. So Jordan left his apartment and on his way there, either called or texted his roommate and said he'd be home later in the evening. Now, there is video evidence showing him stopping at a Carl's Jr. in downtown Tucson. It's actually off of Congress and I-10 freeway. So if you know your way around Tucson, you might know where that Carl's Jr. is.
It's also got a green burrito in it, if anyone is interested.
Ooh, it's one of the double takes?
It's the double takes. It's a splitter. So that was the last place he was seen alive. Now, on November 18th, Marana police actually found Jordan's truck abandoned in a neighborhood. His cell phone, wallet, and keys were left inside, and the truck was actually left unlocked.
So that was just a couple of days after he originally went
missing. Yeah, that was like 2 days. It was probably there for about like 24 hours before somebody noticed it, and then a little after when the cops came and like looked for it. But I mean, the police looked for public aid, but no one could find hide nor hair of him. Like, he just disappeared. And the police went to the public and asked for help. Facebook was a big help in this instance. And a few weeks after he went missing, maybe not even 2 weeks after he went missing on the Thanksgiving weekend, 50 people went and wandered the area around where his truck was found to try and see if they could find him. Maybe he was hurt. That was their hope. But nothing was found. Everything was quiet after that. People were still searching. I mean, there was still a huge Facebook following for him. They were really wanted to help find him. And a lot of people knew the kid. A lot of people liked him. I mean, his friends said he was, like, happiest kid in the world. There's no reason his truck should be there. They didn't know what was going on. So it was a bit of a stressful time for his friends and his family, but they tried really hard to find him.
So when they found the truck, did they suspect that it was some sort of foul play, or did they think that he had wandered off?
It's up in the air at that point, what the cops were actually thinking. They just wanted help with any information, and they said there's probably some, the friends probably know something, but they weren't coming forward. That was one of the statements made by the police, was that they they just want to know what happened and where Jordan is, because his family and his roommate and everything were worried about him, because it's not like him to just up and disappear and leave his wallet, phone, and keys in his truck. So.
Was his truck left running, do we
no,
know?
No, it was just left unlocked off the side. So, or off the side in some neighborhood in Marana. So just north of Tucson, actually.
So he most likely parked it, got out, went somewhere?
That's kind of what they were thinking at the time, I think. So that's why we were holding the search, hoping to find him injured or something like that, because those sort of things do happen. So anyway, for the next month, the search just continues until they finally actually catch a break. In January, the girlfriend of one of the people that they had already interviewed, they went and talked to this boy already. His girlfriend saw a reward poster basically for any information leading to Jordan Peterson's finding him, getting him help, whatever he needed, with any information regarding it. And so she came forward. Court documents refer to her as KB, and she came forward with information about her boyfriend, saying that he had admitted to doing this. Another individual had killed Jordan Peterson and left him out in the desert. So her boyfriend's name was Brian Lamar Lee, and the friend that she referred to was a man named Reed Marone.
So Reed Marone's the one that owed Jordan the $4,000?
He's the one that owed Jordan the $4,000.
So do we know how Brian and Jordan knew each other?
Reed and Brian are basically like best friends, I believe.
Okay, so they just shared a drug dealer, basically.
They shared a drug dealer. They were friends. I mean, this whole story involves like a small group of friends, because all these people obviously knew each other. I think they had grown up together, you know. So shortly after, KB tells the police that they need to look into her boyfriend, Brian Lee Lamar, and Reed Marone. They actually interview Reed, and Reed gives up that he knows where the body is. So he takes the police out there, and on January 14th of 2012, the body of Jordan Peterson was found in a shallow grave in Pinal County, just north of Tucson. All right, so then that's when the third-party discovery comes through. So a third party by the name of Tyler Brown was arrested in March of 2012 on charges of abandonment and concealment of a dead body. Brown agrees to testify against Marone and Lee, and that is where the next little bit of the story gets shoved together and you kind of get an idea of what actually happened on that day. So Brown, when he's having a talk with the police, he states that he showed up at Marone's house like he would any other day, and he notices that there is a unknown truck in the driveway with a couch stuffed into the back of it. So Brown enters the house, not thinking anything about it, just thinking that's a little out of place and weird and that he's never seen it before. They're hanging out, and after a few minutes of hanging out, Brown actually feels like he has a weird vibe happening in the room. He knows something happened, and he asks, "All right, guys, what's going on?"
Some doom and gloom.
So Lee and Marone have like a little powwow and have a conversation amongst themselves. And then they come to Brown.
Did they put their arms over each other's shoulders?
I'm assuming it was something like that.
I have a feeling they more just covered their mouths and slightly.
Like kind of 12-inch whispered at each other.
But they didn't even whisper. They were just like, "All right, dude, so what's going on? Do we tell this guy that we
Should
killed
we
that kid? Or
Yeah.
They're so, like baseball players putting their gloves over their mouths.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what happened as far as we know. So anyway, what they actually reveal is that they invited Peterson over, and when he got there, Lee got behind him and choked him out, and he couldn't finish it because it takes a long time to choke someone to death. So
it's not like the fucking movies.
It's not like the fucking movies at all. So then Marone took turns choking him out and beating him and things like that, and they ended up finally killing him. Like, they finally choked him to death. They told this kid that they had stuffed him in the back of the truck or wrapped him up in plastic. Stuffed him in the back of the truck and put the couch on top of it. And that's
where
he was.
So his body is still in the bed of the truck?
His body is still in the bed of the truck.
Sitting in front of their house.
Sitting in front of their house.
Jesus Christ.
Under a couch.
Under a couch. So it's at this time that Brown says that Marone and Lee, well, Marone number one actually came up with the plan. And Lee just sort of was there for it and went along with it. But
the murder plan or the getting rid of the body?
The getting rid of the body plan. The plan that involved Tyler Brown. So what they want to do is they want Brown to follow them while they're in Jordan's truck out to the desert where they're going to bury the body and then ditch the truck. Tyler, who is their friend, says, okay, he'll help. It's not like he killed the guy or anything like that. He's willing to help them do this.
Still an absolutely terrible idea.
Terrible idea. If you're someone like that kills someone and they want you to be involved, they obviously don't care enough about you.
Yeah, they're not your fucking friend.
Yeah, they don't care enough about you to want you to be safe. So anyway.
While we're on it, it's interesting that you bring up that to make the point that it was Marone's idea to, you know, how they were going to get rid of the body, because as we'll see later, that was part of Lee's defense, basically, right?
Yeah, was that it was all hearsay. And it, yeah, so when we get to that, we'll go over that a little bit. But yeah, that's definitely one of those things that's actually written down. That's what they said, was that Marone came up with the idea and Lee just happened to be there when they came up with the idea of hiding his body. So what happened was, is Tyler went and got in his car and followed Marone and Lee out to a convenience store in Marana, Arizona.
So they're parked at a convenience store.
Parked at a convenience
Jordan's
store
body,
with Jordan's
under
body
a couch.
Under a couch, wrapped up in plastic, and they're leaving.
In Jordan's truck.
In Jordan's truck. They're leaving Brown's car at the convenience store, and they are going to drive out to the desert from there to dig a grave for his body. They drive out to this little desolate stretch of desert north of the city in Pinal County. It's just kind of desolate. There's nothing really there. So they just dig out a very shallow grave. They unwrap Jordan from the plastic sheeting, and they slide his body into the hole, tossing a little dirt on top of him. They then drive Brown back to his car in the truck and abandon the couch along the way. Couch has evidence all over it. So
what do they do with the tarp?
Well, a piece of the plastic sheet was actually found near the crime scene, and on it was Lee's palm print and Brown's fingerprints.
So they also didn't think to wear gloves.
Yeah, they also didn't think to wear gloves or anything like that, because they figured it would take them too long to find the body, that it would be destroyed by then.
So they leave the plastic sheet that the body was in, but they're like, we got to get rid of this fucking couch.
Yeah, so
where did they get a couch?
Well,
one.
It was his couch. Like, it was Marone's couch. He took his couch and used it to cover up the body.
So like, when Brown walks in, he's not like, something's wrong here.
Dude, where the fuck's
your
couch?
No couch.
Yeah. There's no couch anymore. Yeah. I wonder what's going on.
Well, they are also, okay, so one of the other parts of the defense is that they're also on a lot of Percocet at the time. Like, they're addicted to opioids and things like that. So Marone definitely said he was on pills at the time. So was his KB, his girlfriend. That was also one of the defense for Brian, was that KB was on too many drugs to actually know what was going on and just made up the whole story.
Okay, so they could pay their pill dealer, but they owe Jordan,
$4,000? Yeah, that's the thing, is that weed is not a priority when you're addicted to opioids.
Well, and who's to say that they weren't the opioid dealers? They were.
It obviously was a priority if they owed someone $4,000 for weed.
I mean, that could be just one single drop-off, though. That could be.
I don't think it was a $4,000 personal consumption debt. I'm pretty sure that they were trying to move it around.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a possibility that they're doing the same thing with pills, maybe.
Yeah, it's weird with drug dealers like that, because some of them sell drugs to get money and some of them sell drugs to fuel their own habit. Like, there's a certain cutoff where you can actually see, you know, like, if I do this much of my product and sell this much, I can go re-up again. So there's that sort of thought process behind it too.
No personal experience behind that train of thought, Rory?
No. They drove Brown back to his car, and they abandoned the couch, and then they have Brown follow them as they park Jordan's truck in the Marana neighborhood. Brown drives them back to Marone's house, and on the way back, Lee states something along the lines, I can't believe how long it took for Jordan to die, and how tired his hands got while he was strangling him.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah, so they're both kind of like in shock, because I think Marone even says something like, I can't believe that, that's crazy that we did that.
Yeah, something about the situation.
Yeah, this
being
whole situation
so crazy.
Is so crazy.
So this wasn't a planned murder?
Well, it was premeditated. Invited him over to the house with the intention of killing him.
But they're still just kids, so even though they're like, oh shit, look what we actually did. It was a plan, and now it's actually...
We actually did it. This is crazy. We actually did it. Because, I mean, that's the whole reason they invited Jordan over.
Okay,
was...
see, that's what I thought. But if they're talking about how crazy it was, I was like, so was this not planned? Was this
they're
planned?
Just
but I
not...
guess...
as hard as they wanted to be, probably, or something along those lines. They thought that it was going to be, you know,
easy,
perfect plan.
I mean,
they actually said it was perfect plan, I think.
Yeah, they thought it was a pretty damn good plan. So here's where it kind of gets muddled up. So after the 14th, after they discover the body, Reed Marone is actually out of jail at this time. He ends up committing 4 robberies at this time, I believe it is. Is that he?
Yep, four robberies.
It's either he breaks into a home and robs them or something like that. I can't exactly remember, but he gets 4 robberies, and so the police in February then arrest him. Like, he gets arrested at that point.
Looks like we have 4 armed robberies taking place on February 5th, 2012.
So he did 4 in a day?
I'm guessing. I mean, feed his drug habit, you know, he's going to go to prison. Okay, so in that time, about 3 days after they discover Jordan's body, they issue a warrant for the arrest of Brian Lee for first-degree murder. Brian Lee's not even in the city. He's in Houston at the time, and when he finds out that there's a warrant out for his arrest, he turns himself into the police on January 21st.
Which just shows how much more of a pussy he is.
I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, you already killed somebody, just keep running.
Yeah, so he did the right thing and turned himself into the police and got shipped back here and then was awaiting trial. Now, Tyler Brown, here's the weird part of all of this. He did go out of his way to testify against Marone and Lee. So he did do that. And at one point in time, I guess he was threatened by someone in Lee's camp is what the common belief is. We're not sure if that's true or not, but that is one of the things that he did state was that he had to change his story. So they put Brian Lee on trial.
What was Brown arrested for?
He was arrested for abandonment, concealment of a body.
So that was his only charge, really? Was that,
that
he
was his only
along?
Charge, yeah, was that he tried to help them dispose of a dead body. Okay. Like, that was his charge. He didn't have anything to do with the murder. He just had had to do with the help
so
hiding
like,
it.
Like a 6 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10 on the seriousness?
Yeah, I would say that's I think it's a felony. Marone actually goes on trial first, and he ends up being convicted to 25 to life in prison on August 27th, 2013. So his justice came about a little bit faster than the other two. He gets 25 to life for the murder and then 10 years, 6 months for each one of the robberies that he committed.
So like 42 extra years.
Yeah, so he's a little stuck in jail already. So he's in prison. And then Brian Lee's first trial, it lasts something like 8
about
days.
8 days. It started on April 1st of 2014.
Yeah. Did he take a plea?
No, Lee did not take a plea. Lee went to trial. What happened with him was that he got actually accorded a mistrial for the first one. The first trial lasted 8 days. And since Brown changed his statement partway through, they deemed it a mistrial because Brown started adding additional things to the story, saying that he had been threatened by people in Brian Lee's camp earlier and he lied to police. So,
and at that point, Lee's attorneys then said they didn't have enough time.
Yeah, they didn't have enough time. It had to be deemed a mistrial. So it became a mistrial. And I think what was the next trial start date on that was?
It was May of 2014. I believe it was somewhere around the 15th, although I don't have that exact.
Yeah,
the article I read came out on the 15th.
So they bring him back to trial in May of 2014.
With Judge Javier Chon Lopez.
Isn't that the guy that gave you your DUI?
No, that was a different thing.
Okay.
That was Judge Wendy Millian.
Anyway, May of that year, he goes back on trial, and this time they find him guilty. And what day was he sentenced, and what was his sentence, Jake?
May 23rd, 2014, he was found guilty of first-degree murder and kidnapping. He received a life sentence on the first-degree murder charge and 10.5 years on his kidnapping charge.
Excellent.
And he is currently still serving those.
As he will be for the rest of his remaining life.
Do we know how Lee avoided a death sentence? Because he was just as culpable for a first-degree murder charge, but he only got 25 to life.
Stroking the shaft, gargling
yeah,
the gravy.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we didn't
Do you
go
think,
for the...
Is it because he probably extradited himself back to Tucson?
I mean, yeah, there are probably a bunch of mitigating factors. It's all based on what the state wants to go for on that, I think. I don't think it's like they don't have to go for the death penalty. And these kids are, they're still kids. The oldest one's 21. Brown is 18. And Marone is 18 when they do this horrible thing. So
just stupid ass kids.
Stupid kids thinking they're tough, doing some stupid Scarface shit or whatever.
Do we know if we have possibility of parole for
Marone? Marone has a 25. After 25 years, he is eligible for parole.
Interesting.
But not Lee, that motherfucker.
No, Lee is going to rot. Here's with Brown, though. The weird thing was is that since he agreed to testify on them and, you know, put himself at risk and a bunch of other things, he was granted probation. And this is the weird thing, is that Jake and I looked and we couldn't actually find anything on this. Like, we found one article that had been deleted, but
all you could see was the headline on the article. And when you done it, it said it was deleted, but that headline said he got probation.
Yeah, and then on the Facebook page, the remembrance page for Jordan Peterson, it does have his family get on there saying, you know, we appreciate everything this kid's done. We are actually, you know, kind of okay with this sentence. He was threatened. His family was threatened. We appreciate him. Hope he has, you know, good stuff happen to him going forward or whatever. But they were fairly gracious that he came out against the two people that actually killed Jordan.
Yeah, because he testified. He did all of that. And even though, because, you know, he was more of an accessory after the fact than...
Well, I don't even think he was an accessory after the fact, really.
No, I just mean in, like, the terms of, like, how you would think about it. He didn't actually plan it, take part in it. He just helped cover it up.
Yeah, he showed up at the wrong time and had no choice.
18-year-old kid, and his friends had just
car out.
Your two friends had just admitted to you of murdering another person that you perhaps knew and had been around and hung out with. And you know, you're 18, you're young, you're dumb, you're really into your friends all the time. So it's just one of those things that I don't necessarily think this kid is evil or bad. He's just made dumb decisions. And I think the court saw that too and kind of said, hey, we're not going to send you to big boy prison for the next, you know, 3 years because you're young and dumb.
Because you got sucked into something that you didn't know you were going to be a part of.
No part of. And I mean, it was 100% premeditated. They had called him over with the intention to do this. So both Lee and Marone hopefully don't see the light of day for this one, because I remember when this happened, like, this is really vivid in my mind when this kid went missing.
Yep.
Because we knew people. I mean, there are people that Jake worked with that knew him. There were people.
This was right when I met you.
Yeah, this was right around when you met me. And so it's kind of crazy that this sort of sticks out. But anyway, that was the murder of Jordan Peterson committed by Reed Marone and Brian Lee. So this is just going to be our little quick episode for you, just a little filler while we get all the rest of the stuff done. Katie's in the middle of just some awful crime stuff, I'm assuming.
Oh, it's pretty terrible.
Okay.
I've been reading some terrible, terrible things and having some terrible, terrible dreams.
So Katie's right where we need her to be for this podcast, and Jake and I thought we would go ahead and push out a little bit so Katie didn't have to. And that's what this was. This is just going to be a little quick rundown on a local case. We may do this every once in a while just while we're waiting to get the other episodes out to you. So thank you for listening.
And if you want to take a look at the information that we use to put this case together, you can find those on a couple of main sources. The first one being Justia.com, which is a company that has spent tens of thousands of dollars putting together case files and making them readily available to the public. From them, we were actually able to pull direct transcripts from the appeals case for the state of Arizona versus Brian Lamar Lee. The next source that we pulled from was the Tucson City News releases. They have a really good timeline set up on there of the order in which these events occurred, and we used that as an invaluable resource so that we could help keep everything straight. In congruence with those two references, we also cited a couple of news periodicals. One is Tucson.com, which covers a lot of all the local stuff that happens here in town. The other was the Sioux City Journal, which is actually a place that Jordan lived for a short period of time. And because of that, this publication followed this case extensively, and we were able to pull some of our direct witness statements and a lot of other information directly from their articles. Lastly, if you guys want, you can head on over to the Justice for Jordan Facebook page. Obviously, justice has already been served in this case, so the activity on the page has definitely died down a bit in the last couple of years. But since social media did play such a large role in this case, you can go on there, you can take a look at the post from the family, especially the post that was made with the news article that we were talking about that shows that Tyler Brown did receive probation. If you click on it, it will say it has been deleted, but you can see the headline and the first probably 15 words of the article. So head on over there and check that out also.
If you do happen to know anything further on this case, feel free to send us an email at fourcornerscrimecast@gmail.com. That's FOURcornerscrimecast@gmail.com. Anything else, guys?
I mean, if you have any good stories with Jordan that you want to share with us, we'd be more than happy to talk about them and bring a little light to his senseless murder.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we read, he was a pretty well-liked guy and kind of the life of the party. So if you do have any of those stories or any information like that, send it out to us. I mean, that's the worst thing you could do. It'd make our day. I know it would.
Most people who show up to parties with a lot of weed are well-liked.
This is also true. All right, guys. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.